Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Indie Business Podcast. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Well, you know, guys, we cannot get enough of the inspirational stories of women who have started their own businesses and sometimes multiple businesses and really paved the way for all the rest of us to come along behind them, learn from their examples, be inspired, and essentially just do the impossible. And that is kind of a summary of the entire life, both personally and professionally, of my guest today. I am so excited to have with us Lorelei Kraft. She is the author of Anything is Possible. And this is a book about what you can learn from a little country girl who went from a two-room school to building an award-winning village from scratch in just 5 weeks and 5 days. Lorelei Kraft is the Minnesota Woman Business Owner of the Year. She is the recipient of the Governor's Entrepreneurship Award, and she has been featured in numerous national and regional magazines. She has co-authored books with some of the other guests I've had here on the show, including Brian Tracy and also James Malinchak and several other people. She has also been highly acclaimed as a contributor to a documentary which was chosen as a PBS special. Welcome to Indie Business Podcast, Lorelei.
Thank you, Donna Maria.
Well, now, here we are. Most of our listeners, as you know, are women. Everyone is a business owner that listens to this show, or they want to be a business owner. And your book is an amazing story, not just of tips and tricks and things that we can offer each other based on experience as a business owner, but this is a book about life, Lorelei. Tell us about how you came up with the concept of sharing the notion of anything is possible.
Well, I had been involved in a project in years ago. We had a 20% unemployment rate in our poor rural county, and I was making candles out in the middle of the woods in a pole barn, but the tourists loved to come out there. So I came up with this idea of building an entire village where every cottage would have something different from the past. That would be, you know, woodworking, pottery, candle dipping, stained glass, etc. That we would employ people, we would have a place for crafters to sell their wonderful handwork, and we could possibly create a tourist attraction for the local economy. I talked 11 other women and a bank to go along with me on this. We incorporated as founding mothers because we felt that the men had had founding fathers all these years, and it was time to give some recognition to women. And this was our impossible task. We had 67 acres of wilderness. It had no infrastructure, no road, no well, no septic, no electricity, no nothing. We had to build 8 buildings and a restaurant in addition to building the complete infrastructure. We had to hire 60 people and train them for retail. We had to find 200 crafters. We had to do publicity on a place that didn't exist yet. And we only had 6 weeks to do it in from the time we broke ground.
And take us back to the earlier days, even before you did that. You were a newly divorced mom, and you started making candles in your basement. Take us back to the beginning when you had to figure out what to do, because I got to tell you, we got a lot of candle makers on our show, a lot of stained glass people. Yes. Take us back to
before the story of the village then. I was making candles in my basement in Green Bay, Wisconsin. And this goes along with some of the life lessons I have in my book about how to succeed. And my husband worked on the road. He was only home, you know, every third weekend for a day and a half. And I was really, you know, working so hard with the candles, the children, a full-time job. And I knew that I had to make this into a real business. So it was full-time. So I decided that I would go to Milwaukee, and because I'd been selling in Green Bay to all of the religious goods stores there, well, what I didn't realize was that Green Bay was a Catholic community, and they were used to candles. Milwaukee had more Protestant religious stores, and they didn't use candles as much. So I went off to Milwaukee, though, with this idea that I was going to take it by storm and call up my husband and say, quit your job and come home. We have a business. So I went to Milwaukee. The first store I went into, he said, I've never heard of a wedding candle. The next one said, I don't know that anybody would like that. And the next place I went into, he said, oh, I don't know. He said, that's something that's so new, because this was in the days before Unity Candles became big. And the fourth store I went into, the cashier took my card to the back to the manager, and I heard him say, oh, what does she do? Make them in her basement? Tell her I'm busy. I was making them in my basement, and I went out and sat in the car, and I bawled. I didn't just sob. I bawled. My dream was gone. My bubble had burst, but I was not going to go home and admit defeat. So I dried my tears, pushed through one more door of another store, and he took a lot of candles. He loved them. Plus, he gave me his business card. He was, which I didn't know at the time, he was the president of the Religious Goods Association, and he said, take my card to these other places, tell them Dan Stemper loves your candles. And that was the beginning of a business that ended up selling to 6,000 stores. We did the memorial candle for Jackie Kennedy Onassis, for President Clinton's mother, for Dottie West, etc. And the lesson to come out of this is, what if I had quit one store too soon?
Now, take us back to that moment in your car when you hadn't learned the lesson yet. What was it that got you from bawling your eyes out to I'm not going to be defeated? What happened in that moment? Because everyone needs to hear this, because we don't all know that it's going to work out. Take
yes.
us back to that moment and tell us what it was that made you pick yourself up and go on.
I think a couple of things. First of all, I have a lot of German blood, which makes me very stubborn. And secondly, I knew for my own sanity and my own sake, I had to make this work. I had to turn this into a business, and I could not quit if I wanted to do that. And that was the motivation that prompted me to dry my tears and go on to the next store.
And one of the first things that you did after you decided to, and there's so many things in this book, I'm just trying to skim some of the high points. You found 12 women who would actually join forces with you to start a company, take out a loan, build a village, and start selling products that were handmade in this village. Now, we all
yeah.
know we need a team, but tell me this. What was it about you? I'm so amazed that you were able to get these women to do this. And I love the pictures in your book, too. What did you say? Did they all think, oh, my gosh, how are we going to do this? What was it that force that you guys got together, the founding mothers? Tell us about that energy.
Sometimes I like to say that I could sell sand to Arabs and ice to Eskimos, you know. You know what it is? You show the dream with such clarity that other people can see it too and can believe in it. And that's what I did. I talked about, I had all my documentation. I had my data, how many tourists come, how many came out to the candle pole barn out in the middle of the woods. And I put that all together, and I was able to present a cohesive plan. But I was able to show it with such clarity that other people saw it.
So you got other people motivated and excited with your vision.
Yes. Yes.
And also,
and I
would guess from looking at your book, not just your vision, but the role you could play collectively in creating something amazing.
Oh, and it was an amazing adventure. I mean, here I told you about what we didn't have, and we had less than 6 weeks to do this, and we did it. We built all the infrastructure. We built the 8 buildings and a restaurant. We hired all the people, found the crafters, did everything. And from the day we broke ground to the day we opened was 5 weeks and 5 days. And we had told the bank we'd have 20,000 visitors. We had 100,000 show up. And to understand what a miracle that was, mm-hmm. we are 200 miles north of Minneapolis.
So not only is it not heavily populated, but it's also cold.
Yes, that 100,000 visitors only came within 5 months, and then we had to close for the winter. So it was an amazing thing, and we just got so much publicity, and so many stories were written up about us nationwide, because of the unusualness of this story, and the fact that I think people were sort of blown away that women worked together so well, and we did it in a way that that women tend to manage. Okay, I think we do it in teams rather than the autocratic old time. You know, you're going to do it this way because I tell you. And so there was no pecking order out there. If somebody said to me, "Loyal, I take out the garbage," I took out the garbage. You know, there was no hierarchy in that sense. We nurtured everybody like women would do. Every afternoon, we'd call them down to the long porch, and we would say, you know, come on down, and it's break time, and we'd feed them strawberry shortcake and ice cream and donuts. And we so appreciated what our carpenters were doing, because we had started out with only the founding mothers, their families, and the one carpenter and two carpenter's helpers. So it was really a miracle, and then we had to call in 3 weeks before we opened. We had to get in more carpenters. But because of the way we treated them, nurtured them, worked with them, we pounded, shingled, nailed, hammered right alongside of them. They saw us working that hard, and we appreciated them. You know, I remember one of the carpenters said to me afterward, you know, when you came by and I had just hung the first door, and you literally jumped up and down and said, "Oh, my goodness, our first door. Oh, I am so excited." He said, nobody had ever done that for me on a job. It was just, hey, you're a carpenter. You're expected to do this. And so I really think that this project worked so well because of the way we did it as women.
And you know, one of the pages in your book really does this concept justice. I want to read it for our listeners because it's so inspiring. It's on page 27. It says, "People say that when women go into business for themselves, they tend to be more innovative and more creative. They don't have preconceived ideas about the way things ought to be done because they've often been blocked from access to how it's traditionally done in a, quote, man's world, unquote. But we were like the bumblebees. The bumblebee aerodynamically can't fly. Its wingspan is not big enough for its body, but the bumblebee doesn't know that. And the bumblebee just keeps flying."
Yes, and that's what we were. And the documentary that I produced 2 years ago, two of the founding mothers passed away. And I knew that when we were all gone, that story would be gone forever. And so I decided, and this again goes along with my philosophy, I don't think you have to have training necessarily to do well. And I have no background in filmmaking. But I decided that I would produce the story of the founding mothers and the 5 weeks and 5 days. So I did, and I wrote a script and, you know, gathered all the information, produced this film, and it turned out so well that public television has showed it twice already as a special.
Amazing. Again. And one of the things I love, too, about your book, Lorelei, is that you offer what you call these little sort of snippets of life lessons. I want to talk about some of those with our listeners, because this is really the meat of the book, and I highly recommend that you take this little tidbit of information that we're going to share in the remaining time of our show here, guys, and head over to LoreleiCraft.com and make sure you get this book. Lorelei, life lesson number one is don't let, quote, reality, unquote, get in your way. Tell us about that.
Well, I've always felt that way. Whenever I want to do something, I just look at where the goal is. And then if there are obstacles in the way, I either go around them, over them, through them, whatever, under, I don't care. Because if I want to do it, I'm going to do it. And so in my reality is, I come from a two-room grade school in a poor rural town. There were four in my class for the first 8 years. Then I went to a high school. We had a big class of 12. And so a lot of people say, oh, you know, no, you have to have all this education and training and whatever. And all of the things that I've done, I have had no training in at all. So my reality was I shouldn't have been able to do these things. But I just go ahead and I do them. And if you keep your eye on the goal and not on the obstacles, you can get to where you want to go.
I love that, keeping your eye on a goal. And you mentioned earlier the importance of a plan, which is so great. You talked a little bit about what if you had quit too soon. And, you know, it's wonderful that you talk about this in your chapter. You were desperately in need of help. Can you talk a little bit, Lorelei, about how we have to go at some point if we want to grow our business, not huge, but just be able to grow and keep up with things like inflation. We have to at some point go from doing everything ourselves, as so many people making candles or whatever it is in their basement are doing now. We have to go from doing everything ourselves to getting help. Tell us a little bit about how you maneuvered in that area from being, as you described, desperately in need of help to actually reaching out and getting some early on in your business.
Yes. Well, when I was making the candles in the basement, I mentioned that I also had a full-time job, and I had two babies at home and a husband who was home every third weekend for a day and a half. And I literally, well, any of you listening who are working mothers and mompreneurs understand this concept of driving yourself crazy because you're doing everything. You're taking care of the kids, the house, your job, the candles, selling. I did everything. And so I slowly started to parcel things out before we got out of the basement. I found people who, high school girls, who could come in after school and help me decorate the candles. I found another couple that was willing to pour candles in their basement for me. And then they would bring them over and we would decorate them. Because at that time, I was just making wedding and anniversary candles and memorial candles. That was it. And I concentrated my niche on special occasion candles. And that's how we managed to grow. And it took 6 years to get out of the basement. It was not an easy thing, but I just did what I had to do and then gathered the help as I needed it. And then we finally got to the point where we felt we could make a living on it, and we moved the business off into the woods of northern Minnesota.
So a couple of tips I'm hearing here is, number one, you can't add help overnight. It's a process. You have to get to a point where the business can support it, right? And then number two,
yes.
It sounds like you really didn't go for, like, you know, fancy classified listings in a newspaper. You really went right in your circle of people that you knew. You had young girls, as you say, who I guess had a little bit of time on their hands to kind of gradually take some of the pressure off of you.
Yes. And when we moved to Minnesota, that's John and I got divorced then, and so from then on, everything I had to do was, you know, on my own. But within 10 years, I knew that I needed to build a bigger building, and I built an 18,000 square foot factory and made candles out of that. But again, with the hiring, even, you know, we didn't rely on going into the paper and everything. We relied on a lot of word of mouth. Had a lot of women who worked for me who had a great work ethic. And so when we needed somebody else, we would say, do you have a friend who would be a good worker and would fit in here? And so that's how we did our hiring, actually. And it turned out pretty well for us because they generally recommended people that they knew they could work with. And that's really important because you can get just one person in a business who can do a lot of damage, you know, in taking it down and in ending the cohesiveness. I think another reason that we did so well was because I ran the business like I wanted a business to be if I had to go and work there. So we didn't have, we had work teams. We didn't really have bosses. We had, an order would come in, they'd take it from the office out to the floor, and then the women would look at it and say, okay, we're going to have to do this, we're going to have to do that. I think we might be running out of wax pretty soon. They did it all as a team. And we didn't have set hours. I mean, if somebody wanted to come in at 6, I had women who came in at 6. I was personally appalled because I am not a morning person. And they would come. They wanted to come in at 6. And so they'd have a key to the building. They'd come in at 6. They'd start their shift and whatever. Some didn't come in till 9 or 10 because that fit more with their schedule. We tried to work with the women because they had families, they had children, they had schedules, they had other things. And another thing was if somebody needed time off, they got the time off. I had one of the women worked for me and wanted to fly out to Connecticut because her grandchild was being baptized. And she said, oh, I'll only be gone one day. And I said, you take as much time as you need, and we will pull in around you and do your job. Don't worry about it. You don't get to go out there that often. And my son had worked at a place where even at a funeral, unless it was a funeral for your parents or your siblings, they were not allowed to take time off, even for grandparents. And I just think that that's such a a sad and narrow way to run a business. And I think the turnover, that we had such little turnover at the candle factory. I had 45 employees and very little turnover because of the working conditions. They were worker-friendly.
And Lorelei, you know, you talk about word of mouth, which has obviously always been important. Tell us, if you can think for a second about what you might do, Lorelei, if you were starting a candle-making business today, knowing that word of mouth is so important, what would you do? What sorts of things would you do now that we have all kinds of technologies in place that you didn't have back then?
Oh, everything has changed so much from when I started. First of all, marketing has changed a lot. The Internet has made it possible to reach out to people that you never even would have dreamed of. When I had the candle factory, we had to have reps. We would get samples. We'd have to print catalogs. We'd have to send them out, go to the showrooms, go to the shows. There was a lot of traveling, a lot of time that was spent and money that was spent just on the marketing. And nowadays, you can go online and you can create a presence for yourself that's unbelievable. So in that sense, I think today people have a better time of it. On my website, for example, I just putting on my speaking brochure. So I don't have to mail them all out, which is a big expense, and printing and everything. I can just direct people to my website and say, go to the speaking page, and at the end you'll see my 4-page speaking brochure.
And now today, I'm glad you talked about how, and I love your website and how it's set up to make it really easy for people to find you. If you were making something, like if you were still hand-making something, you've also, at least today, got to be, you know, and I noticed you have a Facebook page, and we all have these different things. Can you offer any tips or just ideas, because you're, even though you're not making candles anymore, you're obviously a very innovative person, ideas for someone who's making almost everything that they sell themselves, but they also, in order to have that sort of word of mouth in this new technological age, need to also maintain these different places. Do you have any thoughts or ideas? Have you watched any other people that are hand-making products be able to do that for their micro-businesses and still be successful?
I've seen a lot of people that, because they're not big enough yet to go out and, you know, do a massive wholesale selling. And a lot of people who are mompreneurs or who work at home do so because they don't want to be a seller to, you know, the big box stores of the world and work themselves silly. They want enough to be able to make a good living and provide for their family and still have time for themselves, which I think is a really great new concept for work nowadays. I don't know. You know, I've been away from the candle-making business now for 4 years, so I'm not sure what innovations there are. I know the last big innovation that I can remember was soy candles. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that was because people wanted something ecologically sound and something that didn't produce soot when it burned, and so people went into soy.
Right, right. You also have as one of your life lessons, don't be a yes but person. Tell us what you mean by that.
Oh, you know, I used to do some, after I got divorced, I started doing informal counseling with other people, and I found out that there were a lot of people that were just, there were people who wanted to change and people who didn't. For example, whenever I washed with my clothes, I would cry, and I couldn't figure it out until I figured out it was the box of Tide, which reminded me of him. Every time I went into the living room, the chair was empty, and I cried, and because he wasn't in his chair anymore. And so the same way with music. Every time I listened to classical music, I cried. So what I did was I changed all of that. I don't like to hurt. And I knew that the changes didn't have to be permanent. They could be temporary. So I switched to cheer. I went to country western music, and I rearranged the living room. And then those things didn't hurt me anymore. But when I was doing counseling with people, there were those who would say, okay, yes, I'm going to change that. I don't want to feel pain right now. But then there were the yes, but people. Yes, but I've always washed with Tide. Yes, but I like the living room that way. Yes, but I like classical music.
Okay.
And so they did not want to change. And if you want to succeed in the world, you cannot be a yes, but person. You have to say, I will do whatever it takes right now to to get to where I want to go. Doesn't mean I can't go back someday, but today I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, I love that. It so breaks my heart when I hear people say that and then not be able to get out of it. I think to some extent we all sort of start there, but when we stay there, that's where the problem is. You also share your advice to capitalize on what makes you stand out from the crowd. Now, I know that if you make candles or whatever product you make, Lorelei, you obviously have to make your product stand out. Tell us what your thoughts are on also making you stand out as the maker of those products so that feeds into your sales.
Well, I think it's all part of marketing nowadays. You have to position yourself differently. You have to position yourself as, you know, like me as a speaker. You know, there's, 30,000 speakers out there possibly. So I had to position myself differently, and I did it as, you know, I can prove the impossible can be done. And I can. So most people don't have that advantage. And so the same way with your candles, if that's the product, or with any product, you need to really work on your positioning in the market, okay? You have to make yourself different. You have to call yourself, I'm the only one that does whatever, or I'm the only person that can help you with whatever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You have to do your positioning.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do your packaging. Everything then has to revolve around that idea.
Okay.
And you have to promote yourself in that way.
Great, great tips.
Yes.
Great tips. And that's such a wonderful thing, I think, now, Lorelei, where because of all these new technologies, we can sort of integrate what we as human beings, what we as women bring to the table with what our products bring to the table, and that helps us further differentiate
yes.
ourselves, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. These are just some of the things we talked about. I have, 19 life lessons or tips
yes.
for success and words of wisdom in my book. And also the documentary is really a powerful one to show the women. We actually had to carry the lumber through the woods because we didn't have a road yet. And to actually see the women doing this, it is so phenomenal. So
yes.
I'm really happy that I had a chance to do that.
It's wonderful, and I thank you so much. I'm so grateful that you sent me a copy of that. I want you guys to know we're coming down to the end of our 30 minutes here. These life lessons are awesome, and I want you all to know that these life lessons are bite-sized chunks. So you can sit down, and in 10 minutes at the most, you can read one of these life lessons and incorporate it into your business in your mind, get up off your chair, and go make something happen. I love that about this book, Lorelei, that we don't have to read the whole entire thing at one time to get something out of it. It's called Anything is Possible. It's by Lorelei Kraft, this amazing Minnesota Woman Business of the Year, recipient of the Governor's Entrepreneurship Award. Before we go, Lorelei, what is your final parting thought on being successful as a business owner making products to sell by hand? We've got about 60 seconds.
First of all, you never take no for an answer. You don't let reality stand in your way. And I think you need to realize that the experts are often wrong. Many of the things I've done in my life, experts have said, no, you can't do that. It won't work. You don't have the training, whatever. And I just went ahead and did it anyhow. So I think those are the really important things that everybody needs to concentrate on. And they're not that hard to do. And like you said, even what's in my book, they're simple lessons, you know, like the don't be a yes but person, you know, and you can watch those things. You might also want to spell my name for people because I know it's really unusual.
Would you spell your name for us?
Sure. Lorelei, and then Kraft with a K, just like macaroni and cheese. So it's LoreleiKraft.com, and they can find the book and the documentary and more information on there.
Thank you. Thank you, Lorelei. And I want to thank your founding mothers as well, the ones who are
yes.
still with us and the ones who have passed on, for giving us this amazing example of tenacity and determination. There are women and men all over the world who will hear this message because of your work. Thank you for allowing me to be a part of it. This is Donna Maria signing off. My guest today, Lorelei Kraft at LoreleiKraft.com. Anything is possible, guys. I'll be here next week. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.
Thanks. Bye.